These points, in turn, present to the psychic self a certain relationship on the basis of frequency and, in their interpolations of oscillations from the psychic body, will thus regenerate certain perspectives of interpretation into the physical world. A subaudible frequency of 10 or 15 cycles cannot be heard by the human ear but instead, immediately reacts upon such centers as are associated in the vicinity of the heart and known as the solar plexus. The vibrating surfaces of these nerve centers will, in turn, impart this transference of energy in this subaudible range, into various auditory nerve centers of the body and into the brain. The person in this temporary subjugation of an extraneous force with which he is not customarily associated, will, in turn, react and will feel ill. The same process on the other end of the audio spectrum is also true. Frequencies of 20 or 30,000 cycles per second are similarly superimposed into different bone structures of the head and, in particular, around the ear where, as cells, these structures of the bone act as sort of transducers which consequently stimulate nerve endings terminating on brain surfaces with which these cell surfaces of the brain are not customarily, in any sense of the word, used to associating. This disassociation will cause immediate distress to the person, even though he cannot hear the emanating source of this energy which is being superimposed into his brain structures. Chapter 13. In this scientific portrayal of the principles and functions of the five senses and several of the unknown, and sometimes termed clairvoyant or supersensory perceptions, we have factually related man to an inner or a more spiritual plane of consciousness. We have proven conclusively that man does live as a spiritual or energy being just as he has always, from the beginning of his evolution and even into the beyond when his evolution started in certain conglomerations of sympathetic wave forms and formed regenerative nuclei or cell structures of spiritual energy. These, in turn, formed into aggregates of vortical patterns and thus started or propagated the evolution into that evolutionary pathway of time and space, and beyond the time of time and space, into the unknown where time and space became integrated factors of relationship and assumed regenerative proportions in the dispensations of consciousness, so far as they presented themselves to the infinite. We have now established a definite and scientific relationship of man in his existence with the inner self or the psychic body. We have also gained some idea as to the stratification of this inner or psychic self, as these various strata or plateaus can be likened in many ways to those which we shall find in the interdimensional concepts which we have previously discussed. In other words, the psychic self is a composite relationship of a large number of dimensions, each one harmoniously attuned to a supporting dimension in which it most properly functions. This in turn, is again reflected in the idiom of negative to positive transference into ever increasingly higher dimensions of conscious dispensations into the superconsciousness and even beyond the superconsciousness into the infinite which is called the Father within. Life, therefore, has now assumed an entirely different proportion to that which is commonly associated with present-day dispensations of psychology or medicine. Any act of consciousness does and always will include an infinite number of ramifications as they are concerned in interdimensional relationships through frequency relationship functioning from the psychic self. No act of consciousness can ever be performed by any individual at any given time without its immediate connection to an infinite number of similar experiences which he has performed in past lifetimes. The number of steps which he takes in his daily life are immediately associated with his past life for many thousands of years, far back until he first began to develop legs and walk upon the surface of the earth as some primitive creature. No. We are not trying to prove evolution as it is concerned in the Darwinian concepts, but we are proving evolution as it is concerned with the spiritual metamorphosis of the cell structures and vortical patterns as they portray certain particular resurgent, recreative and expressive values from the infinite consciousness. Man has always been too concerned with the immediate or the physical proportion of all things as they assume themselves in his five physical senses and his reactions to the immediate appearance of any objectivism in regard to the reactive function as it involved his five senses. this possibly presents at this time, one of the greatest of any existing paradoxes, that while all known dispensations of life and the function of life, all known concepts of psychology, medicine, religion and the various other elements and factors of life are always the result of the seemingly unknown and intangible which is called the infinite, yet man knows little or nothing of this infinite. Perhaps it can be said that this is also the purpose of the infinite consciousness. In the essence of extractions from an infinite number of experiences as they thus polarize themselves in the abstractions of positive relationships to the higher self and ultimately to the infinite, any individual can, in the future eons of time, thus develop into godlike proportions and express some of the more infinite propensities of this infinite consciousness. The objectivism of past texts as we have presented them to you in this work, will now reveal the obvious abysmal ignorance in which man is presently revolving in this timeless, spaceless void, and which is infinitely solid in all proportions. While this introspection will, in some way, tend to deflate some proportions of the conscious ego, yet it will in introspection, and if continued in the right direction for a sufficient length of time, relink any individual into a more constructive pattern of evolution in the future. It must always be remembered that the immediate or the present is always the byproduct of the past in its sum and total of derivations and extractions, as present consciousness is largely supported from these extractions and derivations. However, there is always the other polarity which is part of that ancient and so-called Holy Trinity, the superconsciousness which, subsequently, is constantly reflecting into itself these various dispensations of daily life, and in the derivations from past lives, making suitable extractions which, as it does, positively polarizes the idiom of these experiences to itself and thus develops the individual's own personal spiritual ego. Thus in the future eons of time, it is conceivable that this superconsciousness will assume a much larger proportion of consciousness than it now does for any one individual so revolving in this terrestrial dimension. In that day and time when this superconsciousness has assumed a large proportion of its reflective or guiding qualities into the daily life of the individual, he will then be increasingly stirred with the desire, the consciousness, the quickening of this spiritual consciousness which will begin to differentiate him and separate him from the material worlds of consciousness. Chapter 14. Our present-day psychiatry is indeed crude and the practice of psychology as it is expounded in our various asylums and the so-called therapeutic treatment of the different aberrations is likewise crude, the only difference being that there is now some sort of humanitarian interest to the environment with which the mentally aberrated person is immediately concerned. In other words, the psychiatrist resorts only to a temporary change of environment hoping thereby to induce a permanent change in thought patterns. Such a procedure is extremely fallacious and will explain why it is that so little success is being concurrently displayed in modern dispensations of psychiatric treatment. To further expurgate any particular psychic misalignments, the psychiatrist often subjects more advanced aberrations to severe shock treatments. This therapy is indeed crude and primitive and immediately is reminiscent of many of the bygone practices from the pagan or more aboriginal days of the individual healing practices wherein holes were often scraped in the cranium to let loose evil spirits and other weird practices which subjected the individual to horrible and extreme torture. Bloodletting was a common practice in the Middle Ages to relieve various kinds of diseases in the body, and this too smacked of the letting out of evil spirits. The present-day psychologist, in subjecting the patient to a severe shock, can be likened somewhat to fixing a delicate watch with a hammer. The treatment is, as previously postulated, reminiscent of bygone practices. Herein, too, enters another commonly misunderstood fraction of psychological dispensation, that is, the complete elimination of various obsessive factors which have entered into the person's life. Through frequency relationships in various negative dispensations, a person quite frequently not only links himself to past similar dispensations but, through frequency relationship, also links himself to an infinite number of similar negative relationships, some of which have no immediate personal relationship to him but which, through this frequency attunement, automatically at that particular moment, become just as much a part of him as anything else. This includes a number of other ramifications involving energy waveforms which have been constructed by other different entities of human beings. Thus, this person in a negative dispensation automatically links himself to these similar destructive configurations of waveforms as they were previously formed by some other entity. If that other entity is in a spiritual world, wandering about in abysmal ignorance, he is quite likely, through that frequency relationship, to associate himself immediately with the mental processes of the person who was originally instigating the negative expression into his life. This is an obsession. It can be either temporary or permanent. It can be thoroughly established, upon the precincts of frequency relationship, that such things do exist and are existing, to some degree, with every human being upon the face of the earth today. In our everyday walk of life, we cannot associate ourselves with any immediate perspective of life about us without involving ourselves in that same frequency relationship which originally created that particular dispensation, no more than we can attune a radio to a broadcasting station without the direct result of receiving the program then being broadcast. Obsessions in the form of entities, through frequency relationship, can sometimes be permanent. When such a condition is superimposed through this manner in the interpolation of life to some individual, he is usually considered to be mentally aberrated or insane, as the various concepts, ideologies and the other confluxes and configurations of energy waveforms from the obsessing entity are sometimes in direct opposition to the present external surfaces of the then existing interpolation of life of the individual. He will then do strange things and thus be considered insane and will be incarcerated in some institution. This concept is not to be misconstrued with any past existing practices of witchcraft as they are commonly expressed in the jungles and back reaches of the world, either in the present or in the past. Such present or past existing expressions are primitive in nature and lack the common essentials of understanding. We can no more mix or mingle the differences of these past dispensations than we can mix or mingle our present technical knowledge in medicine of the human body with the past dispensations as they were posed by Galen at the turn of the Christian era. And while the old and presently existing forms of witchcraft do contain certain basic elements of truth, yet practices and expressions are crude and primitive and often unfactual, both in the way in which they are usually supposed to exist and the way in which their elimination is attempted. In the future, when such a person is thus diagnosed and is known to be obsessed by an entity which has linked itself through frequency relationship into the person's present expression of life, then the simple and common procedure which is contained in the knowledge of this existing condition will immediately present the necessary and suitable technique for the elimination of this connection. This is done first, by making the obsessing entity aware of what he is doing, secondly, by making the recipient or the one who is obsessed aware also of what is taking place, with the interjection of certain catalytic energies which are projected in a psychokinetical fashion in the process of this introspection. The frequency relationships between the obsessing entity and the person thus obsessed will be no broken and changed so that the obsession no longer occurs. There is no hocus pocus about this process, no beating of drums, no rattles, no jumping or dancing about or wearing of great masks, instead, just a simple presentation of known scientific facts and elements which are presently partially understood in our modern atomic sciences. When our future sciences of psychology and medicine are merged and when they also combine in this union, the different concepts and other perspectives of consciousness which we have entered into in the relationship of the daily life of the individual, we can then empty our asylums, our prisons, our hospitals and turn these buildings into something else of a more useful purpose. Hospitals, asylums and prisons today remain only as monuments to the abysmal ignorance of mankind in his expression of the therapeutic sciences. They are but huge monuments of stone wherein are written in blood the names of countless thousands of people who have gone down to early and needless death through the reinfliction of karmic substitutes and tortures into the netherworlds by this same ignorance. This continual reversal into the primitive reactionary expression of life continues because it isn't understood. It ain't so, are the famous last words of many a person and have condemned others, too, who were innocent, to early graves, needless torture and wandering about in the astral netherworlds until they could again re-establish themselves into a healthier pattern of evolution. How much better it would be if these purveyors of science, these expressionists of the various therapeutic arts as they are so contained in our psychology and our medical science, could realize that their science, their expression was, in itself, an infinitesimally small portion of the whole of infinity. If they could but realize this particular fact for just a few moments, they would then be prone to strike from their consciousness these famous last words, "It ain't so." These words always brand any individual who so utters them with the stamp of ignorance, an ignorance not only of his own purpose in life, but likewise his condemnation of all those with the same type of destructive ignorance with whom he comes in contact. And so man is still continuing his mad reactionary pace into the future. The rumble and roar of his great machinery, as he builds and rebuilds his so-called civilized world, is but a continuance of past age dispensations and refabrications of other temples, other fallacious concepts which perished because they were built upon the sands of ignorance. In laboratories, the rattle of the test tubes and other scientific impedimenta sounds more like the rattle of chains which bind a man to his terrestrial dimension. The wonder drugs which he injects into his veins become an opiate, for he will depend upon them and not the integrity of his own personal character for his salvation in the future. To the cause of reason and to the white and guiding light of wisdom, men will remain unbending and unyielding, but to his own particular conflicts in his daily life, he constantly bends his knee in humble subservience. And yet from all this he must learn, for as a participle, a cell in the infinite consciousness, he is born again and again, and, through the seemingly never-ending cyclic patterns of life and death, each man comes to the time and place when he meets his Creator face to face. In this meeting, he will join in a common union with sanity, with knowledge and with wisdom. Chapter 15. It has been observed that it is much simpler to deny than to understand. This is quite true in respect to any particular person's individual point of evolution wherein he has not become conscious and cognizant of the various relative, inceptive dimensions of interpolations which have been discussed in previous texts. Most often a person so confronted with truths or concepts which are beyond his understanding, always resorts to the subterfuge of denial. More often too, it is found these people always resort to another common subterfuge which can be called finger-pointing, and by this simple device, which is a diversionary measure, they hope to detract not only their own personal attention away from their own inadequacies and weaknesses, but also hope to focus the attention of others away from themselves. It should be understood that everyone, to a lesser or greater degree, supports a preponderance of psychic configurations from past lifetimes wherein he has incepted a large number of life experiences which have somehow been either sinful or unjustifiable in a higher expression of life. These various unjustified objectivisms, while they may not be manifest in a person's conscious mind, yet they always exert a certain pernicious effect into consciousness, and the person is thus continuously subjected in his daily life to a vague sense of inferiority or maladjustment. To compensate for what Freud called a loss or deflation of the ego, this person often will, whenever such particular psychisms reach more than normal proportions, set himself upon some sort of a pedestal, often attending various universities and medical schools wherein, in a submerged sense, the motivation primarily being that of attaining a certain position of power or supremacy over his fellow man, he will thus be able to re-inflate the deflated ego which he has suffered from so many past life experiences. Freudianism in itself, while quite factual in some of the surface or elemental equivalents of the more reflex nature of the subconscious, yet is singularly devoid of any concepts which would relate man in his continuity either to the past or to the future. As a matter of fact, Freudianism itself was brought into being after Freud caught a chance remark from a professor who was teaching him in a Paris school, that when someone who was in trouble sought him out, the professor very angrily remarked, "Always trouble, there is always a woman at the bottom of it all, too." Upon this irritated remark, Freud spent the remainder of his life developing a psychology which thus divested man of all his spiritual attributes and various connections with either the past lifetimes or the higher self. Because Freud did not understand the continuity of life as participating elements in frequency relationships, waveform structures, etc., in modern scientific parlance, he therefore set up a huge and preponderant edifice, coined from various superlatives, some of which were self-invented, and with the obvious intent and purpose that here again was a pedestal wherein he was attempting to justify and re-inflate his own deflated sense of ignorance concerning the true knowledge of life. Unfortunately, this false science has fallen upon eager ears and hundreds of thousands, yes, even millions, have directly or indirectly felt the influence of this evil ideology. It can also be said that by and large, the exponents of this false psychology in the various fields with which they are associated, either directly or indirectly, in controlling the various relationships and destinies of mankind upon the earth today are, in themselves, just as largely masochistic in the subconscious sense as was Freud. In other words, through past lifetimes, here again through the innuendo of sex as it was supported or purported by Freud, the same sense and preponderance of negative expressions in past lives which were mixed up with various sexual masochisms, were again consciously interjected into the present life through this obvious escape device. Among the very first of the numerous interpolations and concepts regarding the true position of mankind to fall by the way when Freud took out his little hatchet and began hewing at the bastions of human knowledge, was the continuity of life expression as it found itself supported in what is commonly referred to as instinct. While it is acknowledged in common psychology that the various plant and animal life which inhabit the face of the earth today maintain their expression of life strictly from instinct, yet man, save but one basic instinct, is much lower on the scale of evolution than any of this insect, animal or plant life, for he does not now have any other than one basic sexual instinct to support him in his way of life, and all knowledge or wisdom must obviously come from the surface of the world about him. The word instinct itself is rather a seriously misunderstood terminology, and a much better substitute would be the word intelligence. No one teaches the tiny spider how to spin a perfect geometrically designed web. No one teaches the duckling how to swim after it emerges from the shell. The scale of plant and animal evolution is filled from one species to another with outstanding examples and portrayals of the continuity of life as it is expressed in these various, countless thousands of species in their widely diversified patterns and expressions in this terrestrial planet. Whatever any particular species is doing to support its particular span of life, it is expressing a direct ratio or proportion of intelligence which was incurred from previous lifetimes lived in almost the identical manner and form to that in which it is presently occupying. The fallaciousness of genetical science, too, is quite apparent when it is evaluated only on the surface as the transference of various characteristics as they are commonly supposed to exist in the genes and chromosomes at the moment of inception or conception. It must be understood that in our nuclear science it is common knowledge we cannot transmute one element into another without also altering all basic characteristics of the original element. Therefore, as genes are composed of atoms, how then, if they are to be transposed in terms of relationship from one lifetime to another, do they assume any proportions other than that which originally so compounded and supported them from the interior of their own dimension? The intelligence which a human or any other species of mammalia, fauna or flora on the face of the earth possesses, is not supported from any genes or chromosomatic structures which originate in the process of insemination or fertilization. Atoms are only adjutants to the expression of various continuities of wave forms as they are stemming into a certain sphere called life consciousness from a certain psychic cell or nucleus of life which is being expressed in an entirely different dimension from the material world. This is just as true with the newborn babe as it is with the spider, or the duckling, or with any other particular species of plant or animal which you might care to examine upon the face of this earth. The child coming into the world immediately begins an association of factors in his present environment which become compromised with derivatives or extractions of reactions from past lifetimes. This is strictly a problem of reorientation so far as the child is concerned, in an environment which is usually quite new and different to that which formerly supported him. That is, of course, except in such basic elements as the way in which he obtains his food, clothing and housing facilities, which has remained basically and essentially much the same from one epoch of time to another. The configurations in which man lives, as they are portrayed in such examples of housing communities, structures, etc., have remained, to some degree, almost intact for many thousands of years. While we may in this day have plumbing and electrical conveniences in our homes, it is also conceivable that many hundreds of thousands of years ago, the earth also supported civilizations which had a much higher and greater degree of freedom from the various physical expenditures of energy which were necessary in the more primitive stages of evolution. In other words, technocracy and automation were much more highly developed in the Atlantean, Lemurian or other cultures than exist in the present day. Therefore, the newly born child immediately begins a whole system of reorientation into various factors of environment in which he finds himself from past life experiences. This will explain to the psychologist some of the otherwise unexplainable enigmas which relate to such factors as creative ability. The child who is considered a genius and begins composing music or expressing science to a high degree of relationship at the tender age of 3 or 4 years, is merely expressing a more realistic continuity of life from one lifetime to another than is customarily expressed by the masses and the multitudes who are in somewhat of a less favorable position to continue such expressionary forms. However, the basic elements in the expression of life, whether they are more or less advanced, whether minor or major, these same principles remain inviolate and intact, whether they are necessary for the propagation of the amoeba from the one-celled animal into a similar amoeba through the simple process of fission into the not-too-distant future, or whether they have continued on up through any particular expression of life as it is found on the face of the globe. Yes, even into the atoms themselves, for atoms as they are synonymous in basic and elemental structure, one atom to another in its own particular orbit is portraying into the physical or material world a certain continuity of expression which is always supported from the interior surface of that atom's consciousness. Chapter 16. In the practice of medicine, the doctor is also guilty of the same nefarious deviation from a true and constructive evaluation of life. While medical science has advanced considerably in the past 50 or 100 years, it yet remains for the future medical practitioner to bring out the true cause or origin of many of the diseases which are plaguing mankind today. It should be borne in mind by the reader at this time, that there is no particular quarrel with psychology or with medicine as it is commonly practiced today, for such psychology and medicine, while in themselves are still primitive, yet they all combine to make up some sort of functional unit or step in the right direction. The main issue in all contexts or expressions wherein we have entered into discussions of this sort, is primarily against the dogmatic attitudes of the exponents of these sciences. Along with the dogmatic attitudes which have been adopted by the exponents of these various sciences in setting themselves up on these false pedestals constructed from pure fabrication of truth, they have literally, either directly or indirectly, affected the lives and destinies of countless millions of people. They have incarcerated hundreds of thousands of souls into useless and needless years of pain and suffering. They have detracted them from their true evolutionary course. But even worse, with a far-reaching effect which concerns the average individual, there is the implication that every man does not possess a soul or that such concepts are not concurrently substantiated by modern psychological or medical practice. The psychologist fails to properly understand an Oedipus complex, which is basically the sexual love of a male child for his female parent or vice versa, and therefore this complex will remain in rather mystical terminology not only in the minds of the psychologists but of anyone who so hears this particular expression. Therefore, from then on, so far as the immediate future is concerned, the complex which has been attributed to this child, remains an unsolved, mystical and undetermined element, simply because the psychologist fails to realize that in past lifetimes, the mother and son or the father and daughter were associated in various relationships as man and wife and built up between them in numerous past lifetimes, a very strong association of sex, which is presently reflecting into their lives in the usual manner and form, and in such vagaries and indispositions which the psychologist calls an Oedipus complex.